You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to another edition of the Daily Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and today's date is the 22nd of August, 2024. And I'm almost certainly going to go over 30 minutes today, despite the fact that I'm dealing with an obscure but extremely significant issue. And that's the significance of repeated American failures in launching or even building any kind of a hypersonic weapon. And hypersonic weapons is what the Russian Federation is using quite a bit in Ukraine with tremendous accuracy, which is one of the reasons that her casualty rate is so low. Now, a hypersonic weapon is usually a projectile traveling at a speed defined as between 5 and 25 times the speed of sound. Below those speeds, they would be supersonic. While above those speeds, the molecules of the atmosphere itself become sort of a plasma. And that's the problem, because it then makes control and communication difficult. A hypersonic weapon has to be maneuverable, and it has to have a pinpoint accuracy. It's, of course, your typical ballistic missile does not have. A ballistic missile may achieve a hypersonic speed, but they can't be maneuvered or have course correction from GPS or anything like that. And there's three general methods of creating the hypersonic missile. The cruise missile, you know, this is all about making something from supersonic, hypersonic. And a rocket motor is installed to boost the missile to supersonic speeds. And then it switches to an engine called the scramjet. It combines supersonic airflow with additional fuel, which it then ignites and then brings it to at least Mach 5, 5 times the speed of sound. Boost glide systems go very high, and they reach the edge of space. And there, a glide body separates from the missile itself, and using aerodynamic lift to extend its range is maneuverable then towards the target. And finally, the aeroballistic missile. It's a rocket-powered design. The ballistic, remember, this uses gravitational force primarily and aerodynamism. It doesn't adhere to your typical boost glide trajectory. It does go to hypersonic speeds. And so this is a combination method. The U.S., of course, can't do any of them. Russia has all of them. One of the authors I consulted on this was Drago Bosnich, who was writing for the BRICS journal. But I come across him all over the place. And this is becoming an embarrassment. So not only are we going to talk about the how and why the Pentagon can't pull this off, but also the methods by which they cope with these repeated failures, which border on the comic. Now, there's been plenty of testing, but the press has been muzzled in this regard. The way that the Pentagon operates, all branches of the military have their own programs, none of them successful. But the U.S. military usually runs tests and claims that they're successful without any evidence. The main army one was called Dark Eagle, which was a ground-based hypersonic weapon, which was a complete failure. And eventually, the project itself was canceled. Pentagon said they'll have something else in a few months, a year later than was originally planned. And then there's a joint long-range hypersonic weapon from the Army and the Navy trying to use the glide body design, which I mentioned already. The truth is that the U.S. military cannot master the very difficult technologies needed to field a weapon like this. Dozens upon dozens of failures. Just last year, 2023, there were 3 test launches which never even took place. Now, I'm quoting from a journal called Defense News. The U.S. Air Force has revealed it conducted a test launch of its hypersonic AGM, Air Launch Rapid Response Weapon, ARRW, earlier this month, but it remains unclear if it was a success or not. The Air Force said that the B-52H Stratofortress bomber released a fully operational prototype made by Lockheed Martin off the coast of Southern California. The March 13 test represented the second launch of an ARRW operational prototype and focused on the weapon's end-to-end performance. The Air Force added, quite cryptically, the test met several of the objectives without giving any details. Now, this wording is very different from other statements. Released in December following the first launch of an operational ARRW prototype, where they said all objectives were met without saying what the objectives were. That same statement said the B-52 successfully released the ARRW. Now, more recently, the word successful hasn't been used. They used the phrase the B-52H Stratofortress just released the second ARRW prototype. Statement about the December test specified that the ARRW reached hypersonic speeds greater than Mach 5, completed its planned flight path, and detonated. But later statements did not say that. Engineers and testers from the ARRW team are collecting data for further analysis, the Air Force said. Asked whether the March 13th test was an actual success, the Air Force would not provide any further information, and they said, we expect less information to be available on this topic in the future for operational security reasons. Using this kind of equivocation is normal. Most of these were complete failures. Yes, it was released, but they don't say what happened to it. It was launched, but they don't say if it was successful or not. They don't say what their objectives are. So they could pretty much do, anyone who reads a press release and believes its contents at face value is an idiot. But they're always claiming that these tests are successful. They release no data, and every time they claim a success, it never seems to go anywhere. In fact, the military has said that there's been no known full end-to-end test of the missile involving a production representative launch system. They say things like, vital data on the performance of the hardware and software was collected that will inform the continued progress towards fielding hypersonic weapons. Which says nothing, but it also says they're learning from their mistakes, meaning that it was a failure. July 25th was, I think, the most recent one from Cape Canaveral. NASA was there. U.S. Navy was there. The weapon was an LRHW, although it hasn't been fully confirmed. In fact, the aborted Dark Eagle tests were supposed to take place in that same place. But the missile itself is only conceptual, and it's a copy of the Russian Avangarde HGV, or the hypersonic glide vehicle, on a much smaller scale and with a much smaller range. But nowhere close is the U.S. in producing an operational weapon. And we know this because the U.S. Government Accountability Office, the GAO, repeatedly criticized the Pentagon for its incompetence. Because their job, the accounting office, is to oversee projects, and when they fail, how much money was wasted and what to do about it. Now, they're always saying that we're on the cusp of this. They project by saying Russian tests were failures. But Iran and North Korea have these weapons. The U.S. does not. Initially, they said in 2021 that the Dark Eagle project will be launched within months. Now, it's been quite a while since 2021. And their best case scenario is 2026. Iran and North Korea are more advanced than the U.S. in this and hence other areas of high technology. One of the reasons, of course, is that, and it shouldn't surprise you, the American military-industrial complex, MIC, is private, is spread all over the world because of outsourcing, and profit-driven, which means that American companies tend to not cooperate and share data. So now, American inferiority to these Russian weapons. And the other significant thing about hypersonic is you can't shoot them down. Even though the media claims it once in a while, it's physically impossible right now. Now, actual scholars in this field say that the gap is now in decades, because while the U.S. hasn't fielded a single one, the Russians continue to upgrade theirs. But yeah, the narrative right now is that the U.S. military will dominate hypersonic weapons with things like the Dark Eagle, despite the fact that the Dark Eagle has been scrubbed, and there's been not a single verifiable successful launch. They claim that this weapon that they're working on will reach Mach 17 and have a range of roughly 2,000 miles. Which, again, Bosnich says is within its banned intermediate range missile, which is sparking another military a missile crisis in Europe, although this time without any leftist protests. But the U.S. can't field what amounts to 21st century hypersonic weapons. It's using outdated techniques, according to the GAO. And both branches, the Army and the Navy, have no idea when anything is going to be operational. The previous three test failures, which were not reported as that, we find out later, they were blamed on the launcher rather than the missile itself. But that kind of equivocation is common practice. They talk about successful booster tests, which does not refer to hypersonic weapons, or just make up a story about a successful launch, and then have a bunch of failures after that. Of course, projection is key here, because the minute that becomes public knowledge, you have headlines that say, Putin fears U.S. weapons. Days after the July 25th failure, you have the exact same thing being tagged on Russia. That the U.S. media was talking about unprecedented launches, and then dead silence, because they were not capable of giving humiliating explanations as to what yet again went wrong. Russian hypersonic weapons are obliterating U.S. and NATO personnel and material across Ukraine, and of course they're completely unopposed. Here's just a few things that happened, showing how significant these weapons are. Just in a space of a couple weeks, massive munition storage was destroyed in Nikolaev on July 23rd. A whole bunch of NATO and Kiev personnel were wiped out once their hideout was located near Kharkiv. At least 50 NATO operators were obliterated, including Americans, UK, Georgia, etc. The regime can't hide these losses forever. There's a retired Spanish colonel, Pedro Bangos, who said that more than 18 SAS, British SAS operators, were killed on one Russian strike in Odessa, another 25 wounded, and that this was the Iskander M, one of the Russian, the most common Russian hypersonics, is doing all the work. A day earlier, July 22nd, the Ministry of Defense published a video showing the destruction of a huge warehouse packed with NATO weapons, including the HIMARS. Again, another Iskander M strike in Nikolaev. This was part of a wider Russian hunt for the MLRS, or the multiple launch rocket systems, which would include the HIMARS.
as well as the tactical ballistic missiles that these systems can fire. One day before that, another Iskander M obliterated a large group of enemy personnel in Donetsk. Not the city, but in the western part of the region. 240 were killed, many of them were mercenaries, and 60 pieces of equipment obliterated in one strike. A week before that, a military train was destroyed by an Iskander M in Budi in Kharkov. They were first reported July 14th, and then on July 11th, another Iskander destroyed two batteries of the Patriot missile system. That was stationed near Odessa in the south. Military column was struck on July 8th near Sumy on the border. 20 vehicles, 65 men, soldiers were neutralized. Foreign personnel were involved. Three HIMARS systems were destroyed that very same day near Kherson. A dozen foreigners were, quote, eliminated. These were the same crews, by the way, that were most likely responsible for the terrorist attack on sunbathers in Crimea, Sevastopol, which, of course, prevented yet another strike. And another example of clear the use of terrorism. A few days before that, several Soviet aircraft in the Mirgorod Air Base in Poltava, about 175 miles from the border, was attacked. Four Su-27s were destroyed. They just kind of appeared there. They were out in the open. They probably didn't have pilots. I'm not sure what the point of it was. They haven't flown. And about 30 men were killed in both of these areas. This is just a couple of weeks, if that. This is why Russian casualties are low. They don't have to worry about this stuff. These weapons matter. And the regime not only doesn't have them, but can't produce them. And it gets worse because we've spoken about hypersonic weapons on this program before, going back years. It was in 2004 where Putin first mentioned that this is going to be I reported on it at the time. It's going to be a priority. He was made fun of at the time. And now NATO has been exposed. But even basic ICBMs, there's a struggle for the MIC to produce them. 5 years ago, people like Bosnitz and myself were saying that the Pentagon is maybe 20 years behind Moscow in these technologies. Everyone thought that was too extreme, but it's probably worse than that. The GAO itself, in their report on the matter, talks about at least a dozen failures in their tests. And when they use the word successful, they're using it in a very equivocal sense. None of the planned ground or sea-based launchers were ever used in their so-called successful tests, so their validity is questionable. And it's not just in these areas, but the U.S. is decades behind. The media talked about the super-duper missile, which, you know, I can't believe they'd use such childish language. But when you hear terms like that, this chest thumping, you know that the widespread, how widespread the trouble really, really is. The ARRW was ultimately canceled. But all of the, there's several programs going simultaneously, which the GAO also criticizes. And one of the arguments that the regime uses, and it really is pathetic to say that Moscow stole the non-existent American hypersonic technologies. Unfortunately, Donald Trump has very recently, in the last few days, made that claim, which makes him look silly. But as I said, Putin announced the hypersonic project back in 2004. But of course, as always, this is projection, because the U.S. precisely, in fact, there's a whole bureau of spies being sent into Russia to steal hypersonic secrets. In fact, American intelligence has been trying to get Russian scientists to bribe them, and to recruit them even, to help the struggling American program. This hasn't worked. So in the meantime, really all that the regime can do is put false reports of shooting down these weapons. And it's a far cry from just being my or Bosnich's opinion. Jeffrey McCormick, who is the senior intelligence analyst at the National Air and Space Intelligence Center, and his testimony to the House Armed Services Committee, the Strategic Forces Subcommittee, back in March, that China has the world's leading hypersonic arsenal, which of course comes from Russia in the first place, and that Russia has 3 deployed hypersonic weapon systems, including 2 that have already been used in the conflict against Ukraine. 2025-2026 is a highly optimistic target, which the regime is promoting. The Government Accountability Office, as I mentioned, the Weapons System Annual Assessment Report published in June this year. The Rapid Response Weapon Hypersonic Program, which is covered there in that report, stopped testing this year, and they didn't request funding for it in the 2025 budget, which means it's been abandoned. Now, what McCormick says is, again, something I've been saying for a long time. Why China has won, again, using Russian technology, but they ran with it, is their intense and focused investment over the last 20 years in the necessary development and testing infrastructure for these kind of weapons. In other words, because it doesn't use the free market system or the oligarchic capitalist system, it has been more successful. China has an extensive infrastructure, including the very advanced and humongous wind tunnels that you need, devoted exclusively to these hypersonic systems. Because the state has a strong presence in investments, and that their military-industrial complex, or the MIC, is state-owned, they thrust ahead. Purdue is the big university for hypersonics. Stephen Scheidner, who's a professor there, says that the technology existed, or at least was in development in the Cold War, but it's degraded very badly since the end, since 1990. And the testing capability simply doesn't exist. About 60% of university grants in total come from the Department of Defense. But right now, it's not even that the U.S. can't produce it. The U.S. can't even test it. There's the wind tunnels that you need for this are highly specialized and very expensive. Purdue and the Defense Department are working on their LIFT system, the Hypersonic and Extreme Environment Test Facility, run by a guy named Joe Steele. And they have interested customers, but the technology just isn't present. And we're just talking about the test facilities, not even the weapon itself. The infrastructure just isn't there. And even Dan Galton, who is the director of space navigation, assembly and manufacturing at Draper, who's involved in this testing as well, says, talking about these weapons at hypersonic speeds, and I'm quoting him here, they've been studied extensively. It's still not well understood. It's a very complex and unforgiving environment, one very difficult to model, so that it really demands a much higher technical capability on the guidance, navigation, and control pieces of the vehicle to be able to adapt quickly, to be able to overcome some of those forces that are being exerted. In other words, U.S. doesn't know how to do it. But he'll also say that this is the cutting edge of weaponry. And it's not just for weapon systems or missiles, but rapid transport of personnel and materiel. And he goes on to say that China will not slow this down. They're upgrading now. And, you know, he complains, well, they really need to accelerate this program. But the GAO is saying that even if they had the technology, the corruption and the mismanagement, the embezzlement of funds means that it really can't be done. And partially because of the contractual obligations of various corporations who are not going to share their insights with anybody else. The latest reports from the Undersecretary of the Army, a guy named Gabe Camarillo, stated to the media that the long-range hypersonic weapon, the LRHW, which is a joint venture with the Navy, which I've mentioned already, was allegedly scheduled for fielding, which is their term for actually operational. the Emerging Technologies Institute conference on of the National Defense Industrial Association, which is the industry's consortium, he said there that they're going to now eventually field something like this, and it's a critical part of fielding our multi-domain task forces in the future. Now, this high-ranking U.S. official went from scheduled, meaning it's definite, to eventual, says all you really need to know. None of the scheduled fielding dates ever turned out to be true or even close to the truth. This is why the GAO report, which I've read in PDF, talks about the level of mismanagement and corruption. Let me quote from this report here. They say, the Department of Defense is working to quickly develop hypersonic weapons which are capable of moving at least 5 times the speed of sound and have unpredictable flight paths that could give the military a tactical advantage. Most of the DoD's efforts to develop these weapons aren't using modern digital engineering tools, such as virtual representation of physical products. By not following the leading practice, they won't benefit from the tool's advantages, such as speeding up the schedules for prototypes and making it easier to incorporate changes based on user feedback. We recommend addressing this, applying other leading practices. Now, that sounds very bureaucratic, but what the GAO says here, and this is an official publication, is that either they can't use the latest methods or they won't use the latest methods. The GAO is essentially warning both branches of the military, as these failures continue to pile up and the U.S. Army still talks about their nearing completion of its final testing, this report says it's not going to be very easy. To say that you guys could gain from the industry's best practices means they're accusing them of incompetence. An incompetence that has to come from somewhere. That digital engineering is not being used by the Pentagon or the private companies that deal with this. And that's what causes delays and these massive cost overruns. The Army, too, not using the latest methods. The Army even told them that it's not going to use digital twin technologies, which is the virtual representation of something that's yet to be physically manufactured. 4 of the 6 current weapons programs reviewed by the Government Accountability Office don't utilize these advanced methods. And here's what they say, too. They say, years of effort and billions of dollars spent on hypersonic weapon development have yielded considerable progress, but DoD has yet to field its first operational hypersonic weapon system. Yet even fielding these prototypes will not ensure an effective or affordable capability. The report then criticizes communication between the Pentagon and the military-industrial complex, that is to say, the private corporations, as well as not just among corporations, but among various service branches. There's no feedback from users. And this all corresponds to endless delays and cost overruns. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Russia now is the only superpower on the planet with using hypersonic weapons and integrating them within their military tactics, operation, strategy, and even doctrine. Russia has 2 dozen types of hypersonic weapons, either in service or just about to be used. The West, of course, has 0, despite running many programs, dozens of them, simultaneously. The U.S. can't field a working weapon. Let me read again. This is from the BRICS Journal. Just last week, and this is meaning late June 2024, the head of the Ground-Based Strategic Deterrent Program, Air Force Colonel Charles Clegg, was fired after years of failures, delays, and cost overruns. The GBSD program is expected to finalize the new Sentinel, the new American ICBM that's supposed to replace the horribly outdated Minuteman III. It's by no means groundbreaking technology. It's just an up-to-date version of the older ICBM. It will not have any maneuverability, as in the case with Russian advanced Russian equivalents, such as the RS-24 Yars. Still, the development of even basic missiles with a regular ballistic trajectory seems to be a major issue for the U.S. military-industrial complex. It's conceivable now, given all that, that the U.S. wants to start a global war now, thinking that maybe a decade from now will be too late. Now, there are several Russian weapons that they've been using in the SMO. Heavily fortified enemy targets have been destroyed with the Kinzhal, the 9S-7760, the air-launched hypersonic missiles, and the Zircon, 3M-22, used against high-value targets across the country, especially, you know, GUR personnel, military intelligence personnel that were part of or terrorist attacks on hundreds of Russian civilians against CIA, NATO intelligence services aiding them. But the Iskander, as I've already mentioned, is the most cost-effective and the most common. The Iskander-M, as I mentioned before, it's quasi-ballistic. In other words, it partially uses natural forces. But its top speed is Mach 9, range about 325 miles. But it's far more advanced than any regular ballistic missile. The K, the Iskander-K, is modified to launch cruise missiles like the R-500, about 325 miles, and the Novator, which is almost 5,000 miles. And these are modular, which means it's very easy and affordable to upgrade the system. That means you could modify it right on the ground. Of course, these are very expensive missiles, so they're only going to be used against high-value targets. Concentrations of infantry, heavy armor, parked aircraft, whatever. And it has pinpoint accuracy. The Iskander-M has a warhead of about 500 pounds. You could use any kind of payload you want. Fragmentation, submunition, penetrative chemicals, or even the EMP, the electromagnetism. And, of course, nuclear weapons, if necessary, up to 50 kilotons. It's terrifying NATO because it is impossible to intercept, as it's been, you know, its performance has shown this, massive advantage over NATO. Every once in a while, you come across a claim from some idiot that one of these has been shot down, but that's never been verified. Now, the new upgrades bring the range to about 1,000 miles. That's why they call it, well, 1,000 kilometers, the Iskander 1000. Upgrades to its guidance, propulsion, warhead, and pretty much everything else. And you have this within the Kiev regime state propaganda, talking about how deadly this thing is, that the 1000 has a circular error probability of less than 5 meters. It also has an autonomous inertial guidance system with satellite navigation correction and possibly with radar guidance, based on a terrain map in the target area during the final stages. Now, we know this is true because the Kiev regime isn't going to be talking about it like this. They would try to, ridicule it. But describing it like this, saying that this is coming off the line very soon, means that this is real and that they're terrified about it. What's happening now is that the Russian military is unifying various components for both Iskander and Kinzhal systems, which is easier to, accelerate production, and of course it's modular, so they're simplifying the upgrading process. Their warheads, their range, their maneuverability, efficient production, all of this is being improved. In fact, North Korea took the Russian technology and created the KN-23, which is a much larger copy of the Russian, with a range of about 900 miles. Now, let me give you, and this is very important, I want to give the other side here. And in so doing, this is the response of the American regime apologists. The guy's name is Alex Hollings. This is from December of 2021 in something called Sandbox, which is a privately owned military publication. And I want to give a summary of how they deal with this, how they cope with this. And the article, I mean, this has been modified and copied since 2021, and therefore you can say this is more or less the official response to all of this. And the first thing they say is, don't get too excited about words like hypersonic. It's not science fiction. They say hypersonic platforms have already been around for decades. So the first argument is that, well, this is not really a big deal. But he says, well, the space shuttle regularly exceeds Mach 25, 18,000 miles an hour during reentry. Anyway, the X-37B could reach these speeds too. That means the U.S. possesses already a variety of hypersonic platforms, just like almost everyone else. Even Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos can claim hypersonic capability. So he's trying to connect, you know, NASA's Mercury missions, SpaceX, Crew Dragon, whatever it is, to weapons production. The point he's trying to make, I think, is that the term hypersonic shouldn't just be applied to weapons. In most media, now he's blaming the media for this, the media is framing the discussion just around the capabilities America lacks. Now, first of all, the U.S. media doesn't say this, and no matter what they say, this doesn't remove the idea that the U.S. has failed over many years to create a weapon like this. And to buttress this claim, he quotes James Acton at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, the nuclear policy program, and this guy says, it's very commonly asserted that there is an arms race in hypersonic technology and that the U.S. is losing. But in many ways, the U.S. is running a different race from Russia and China. Now notice he says hypersonic technology, not hypersonic missiles or weapon systems. This is apples and oranges. They even go so far as to say that using reusable spacecraft to aid their own defense efforts. China testing their own version of America's X-37B, as I mentioned before, in 2020. And that's the lens through which we have to talk about hypersonic weapons. This is a very strange argument. It's something along the lines of saying that, I lost a boxing match in the ring. I got knocked out. But, you know, I'm much stronger than he is, and I could bench press a lot more than he can, and my wife is hotter than his. If you look at that, well, I'm not a loser at all then. And then they say that weapon tests are supposed to fail. That's the very nature of testing. All these various claims and arguments to deal with American failure. So let me summarize what the literature says in this from the American point of view. And they're all over the place. They say that, well, hypersonics aren't really that important after all. That's very common. Because the U.S. can create hypersonic craft in other areas, which I just mentioned, that means she's not really behind in anything. Well, the weapon is the same thing, right? Then they say, this guy Holling says, well, Russia is as a destroyed economy. So the only thing they care about is image and global prestige. That's why this had to get off the ground, so to speak. Which is a psychological argument that doesn't hold water. I don't know where he gets that from. Then he says, the U.S. hasn't been spending enough on it, so really we're not trying. That's why it's a failure. And I'm sure Russia had failures too. But then, which is a very strange, if I was going to try to defend this, I wouldn't use this argument, that the U.S. has no real testing infrastructure, like wind tunnels, which I've mentioned already. Well, that's a terrible argument. You know, sanctions have destroyed the Russian economy, so the only they're spending all this money trying to prove Russian resilience. Now, of course, he doesn't know anything about Russia. The sanctions have helped the Russian economy. And then the weirdest of all, that because these missiles use older Soviet technology from the 80s, it doesn't count. Or they can't be taken seriously, or something like that. I can't quite make it out, but that's not uncommon. And then finally, the U.S. is obviously the preeminent military power, so there's really no reason to develop these kind of weapons. And again, it's no big deal. And I'm trying to be as charitable as I can here. That's basically the regime's response in the major media as well as military media. Now, if you do a Google search on these things, you're going to get lots of headlines. Given everything that we've talked about, many media say that the West already has these weapons, and they can strike Russia within a few seconds. In fact, one said that the UK has these and are going to use them. There's no detail, and of course it doesn't exist, but Many claim that these missiles have been shot down with no detail. Usually after an American test failure occurs, they'll publish an article saying that a North Korean or Russian or Iranian test has been a failure. This is what happens when you have embedded journalism. And that's just the start. Now, most of these claims I've already talked about. But I'll repeat that the stealing of hypersonic technology from Russia and China has been a huge CIA project for years, especially in material science. Of course, the coating of the weapon can't burn at such speeds. And the very fact that the American media says that Russia is doing what they're doing is just another case of projection. This is why in Russia and China, these weapons are at the highest level of classified information. The Brookings Institute just denies its existence altogether. But this is a combination of special pleading, apples-oranges comparison, deflection, and projection. The U.S. is in such desperate straits that they're trying to get the Japanese to help fund more research to get a weapon in the air. They've also approached the Australians. So the U.S. is admitting we can't do this alone. Now, the claim that, well, the space shuttle can go even faster than this, therefore we don't have to worry about hypersonic weapons, it's a bad argument to begin with. But let's just say that the biggest difference between any other kind of hypersonic craft and the missile for military purposes is that the missile has to be maneuverable in flight. It's not a manned flight. And it has to be extremely accurate to a meter or two. So what it comes down to scientifically is that the Americans can't solve two overlapping problems. The first is providing control over the flight of missiles at hypersonic speeds, that is to say, to maneuver them, and the problem of ensuring the operation of these targeting systems at hypersonic speeds at very, very, very high heat. I use the word special pleading quite a bit. And what that means, it's not projection, but it's a method of coping. Special pleading is that, you know, Hollings can't deal with a cherished belief being challenged, American superiority. So what happens? This occurs with Jews and a lot of other issues. The guy will move the goalposts to make it impossible for otherwise solid arguments to be persuasive. But would never do this for any other topic. So special pleading is to have one standard of proof for one's favored position, but another much lesser standard for everything else. And this is why special pleading makes you sound stupid. Now, Hollings wrote this article in 2021. Yet in 2024, no successful product has been created. Hollings even goes so far, I think the Brookings Institute says this too, that most of these tests have been successful. And we've already talked about what success means. This is where equivocation comes in. If the missile is successfully launched, which was done on March 13th from the bomber over Southern California, the data link experienced a malfunction. And in fact, the missile was lost for a while. And it wasn't until the 24th, 10 days later, trying to cover this up, saying, as I mentioned, it achieved several objectives. And this is when they said, we're not going to be releasing any more information. So that one test had five specific objectives. And they admit three failures, one partial failure, and one successful test. And it was almost canceled as a result of this. It allowed two more tests in 2023. In October, that last failure most likely was the end because the missile failed to launch entirely. That was in 2023. Right around that time, there was a series of articles talking about Russian missiles as ineffective. Success is what the DoD says it is. This is the endless struggle of liberals, neocons, military veterans, and journalists to somehow explain away American decline, especially in the military area. Since American decline means their most cherished beliefs and ideals are false, or at a minimum are being surpassed. This is a scientific issue. The materials in these weapons have to withstand high temperatures while still allowing the passage of radio waves at hypersonic speeds. The heat-resistant materials the U.S. have come up with they're simply too heavy, and they have poor radio wave transparency. So this is not just a matter of money or anything else. This is just the scientific establishment can't do it. But the other failures, they've been separation failures, ignition failures, or the missile not going anywhere at all. These are significant concerns from a country that claims to be a pioneer in modern rocketry. And the Germans did, and the Soviets did during the Cold War. So you're talking about repeated failures of a project in an area that the U.S. claims absolute excellence, suggesting that there's a problem with high-tech research and these development projects. Who's managing them? Where's the money going? This is basic competence. The failures are linked to a pattern of declining technical talent in the U.S., the over-reliance on outsourcing. We're talking about things like diversity hiring, private firms refusing to communicate with one another due to profit and market share concerns. This is a real-world consequence of dumbing down, the removal of standards. This does have real consequences. Lowering standards for female and non-white applicants in engineering schools has actual performance-related outcomes. Our infrastructure in the United States and Western Europe, or much of Western Europe, but especially the U.S., is crumbling. Industry has long gone, and hence the infrastructure and the talent for industry is long gone. So why wouldn't something like this ever occur? And anyone denying this simply fails to understand the basic social problems and their causes, making their work, again, nothing more than special pleading. And it's precisely this diversity ideology that the U.S. military is trying to impose abroad. And it used to be that NASA would manage projects directly, in-house ability. But things like the Artemis program, they faced delays, multiple delays, because profit and rent-seeking firms have plants everywhere, all over the planet. Even the state has largely been privatized. And this pattern, you could find it in the military as well, where many projects, according to the GAO, have ended prematurely or have been terribly deficient, with contractors making all kinds of excessive demands, dragged through the court, given various contracts with subcontractors and sub-sub-subcontractors. But this is what happens when you outsource, when you hollow out your in-house, both domestic and state-run, areas of technical expertise and production. That's at the root of these problems. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.